I've maybe already mentioned in a previous episode that I am allergic to New Year's resolutions. They just don't work for me. I'm Chris Johnson, by the way, and you're listening to Pause, Purpose, Possibility. I'm thinking of this one as part three of a subset of episodes where I'm exploring what it means to live a life that matters. Thanks for being here. Anyway, this year, at the turn of the calendar, I, instead of New Year's resolutions, found myself wanting to live with intention into a posture of openness and possibility. Aspirational, I thought, even inspirational, but also sufficiently vague as to avoid the weight of guilt and shame that comes with failing to meet specific measurable goals, one of my shadow sides that I've come to accept. Anyway, one of the ways that this intention of living into a posture of openness and possibility has manifest so far in these first few months of 2024 is that I've been sorting through and purging the bookshelves in my office. It's been a bit like conducting an archaeological dig, sifting through the layers of past lives, unearthing relics of earlier chapters or incarnations of my work and professional identity. Seminary masters, grad school PhD, teaching, program directing, involvement with various regional and national initiatives and organizations around experiential learning and civic engagement and social justice and leadership for the common good. Things that still matter to me, but that no longer take the shapes in my life that they did. Some things I have kept. But I've also managed to jettison around a dozen boxes of things connected to work I used to do but won't ever return to, tied to iterations of the person I used to be but am not anymore. What I'm after, in terms of manifesting that aspiration toward openness and possibility, is simply to clear space on my shelves, all around my office, and to see what that does to clear space in my soul, in my imagination, in my sense of self and life and work and calling on the planet. It's been slow, emotionally complicated work, but I have been making good progress. Thanks very much. And, of course, it's not the first time I've done this kind of thing. Among other occasions over the decades, I have moved several times throughout my adult life, and each time has involved variations on sorting, thinning, keeping, rearranging, donating, pruning. Most recently was when we moved into our current home in Minneapolis after some 19 years in our previous home, a move that took several months and was finally concluded in what turned out to be the week that George Floyd was murdered. Talk about taking stock of one's life and place in the world. Anyway, that last U-Haul truckload of stuff from our St. Peter house was, well, a truckload of stuff hefted down from the garage attic, which had been the trusty dumping ground for things that had nowhere else to go across the 18, 19 years that we lived there. The flotsam and jetsam of raising three young kids from toddlerhood to college. Clothes, books, toys, rocking horses, high chairs, the twins' nursing pillow. The detritus of various pets, fish tanks and hamster wheels and bird cages and rabbit hutches. An accumulation of, you never can tell, it might come in handy someday, odds and ends from back when the house was first built. Old luggage of our parents. The sets that Kim and I each got for high school graduation gifts back when that was a thing. Crates of holiday lights. You know, stuff. Boxes and boxes of stuff. And among them all were three boxes that actually have moved with us everywhere we've lived. Each one festooned with multiple layers of dried, yellowing packing tape and faded magic marker labeling associated with the various destinations along the way. Baltimore, Hudson, St. Paul, Cedar Rapids, Storm Lake, and then St. Peter. They had not been opened since, well, I don't remember the last time. Certainly before we moved to St. Peter, for sure. So at least 20-ish years, if not longer. These three boxes were boxes of my life across roughly a decade from high school in the late 70s, early 80s, through college and into seminary, late 80s, early 90s. Much of it in these three boxes is just paraphernalia, like old high school yearbooks. Mementos from the concerts and contests and plays I was in those days, programs, photographs, a few scripts, which I think I was supposed to have turned in, don't tell anybody. A faded yellow felt Star of David from the Diary of Anne Frank. An empty spray can of silver-gray hairspray from when I had to be aged to play the doddering Mr. Witherspoon near the end of Arsenic and Old Lace. A black elastic armband from when I was a member of the school board turned barbershop quartet in The Music Man. Stories from my hometown newspaper, the Litchfield Independent Review, about me that my mom had clipped out and saved. Honor roll announcements, scholarship awards, 4-H achievements, you know, proud mom stuff. There was also bundles of photos, my journal, and a tourist site guides from my college choir tour to Eastern Europe in January of 1983. Another pile of things from a summer study abroad program to Europe in 1984. Photos and notebooks from the 2 summers I worked as a counselor at Camp Amnicon, an adventure-based camp on the south shore of Lake Superior, whose signature offering was 34-foot Voyager replica canoe trips into the Apostle Islands. Lots of things that are generally just fun to see again. Some of it stirred vivid, treasured memories. Some just mists and shadows of what's now forgotten. But what really captured my attention in going through those three boxes was a half dozen or so smaller packages, a couple of shoe boxes, a couple of brown paper bags, and 2 small cloth duffel bags, one a light blue denim with the Pringles potato chip guy printed on the side, and the other a dusty orange with the Wheaties logo emblazoned across it. Taken together, these smaller packages are crammed with hundreds of handwritten cards, letters, and notes from, it seems, everyone who ever wrote to me across that decade of my life. Oh my gosh. All these voices from the past. All these glimpses of who I used to be. Fragments of who the writers were. Snatches of what was going on in the world, in our lives, back in the day. All written by hand. Written well before the invention of email and social media and all the other electronic modes of instant 24/7 connectivity we have in this era of increasing fragmentation, distraction, separation, and loneliness. Such lovely manifestations of unique personalities and habits, styles and quirks, worldviews and wonderings. Some handwriting swoops and swirls across the page. Some hands march. Some feel square-shouldered and upright. Some appear languorous and wandering. Some are sprawling. Some precisely trimmed. In the mix are some that are brief and sweet. Just a quick note to say hi. And some are longer, more involved missives that swing from updates, how classes are going, to, ooh, love life reports. She really just seems to get me, you know what I mean? To anxious ponderings on some of the big questions of meaning, faith, and the uncertain future. A few of these people, I admit, I don't actually remember. Most, gladly, I do remember, even fondly, but, admittedly, have not been in touch with at all for many, many years. A few are people with whom I have maintained a sort of contact, at least the once-a-year Christmas card sort, but with whom I've mostly not spoken for decades. From some folks, there are dozens of cards and letters spanning a number of years. From my mom, who died way back in 2002, writing to me when I was away at college. Little thinking of you cards with a note. Snippets of news from the farm. Comments about the weather. Updates about my siblings. Always with a looking forward to your next visit home. Seeing her handwriting again. The graceful, widely looping cursive of a one-time country school teacher helps me to hear her voice again. And there was a big stack from Jim, my roommate for 3 of the 4 years of college. Jim was the best man in my wedding. Jim was my best friend. Jim was my soulmate. Jim was ripped from me and from the world 5 summers after he graduated while riding his bike through Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado. Hit by a car, being driven by a couple of teenagers driving too fast on a gravel road. His mangled body and bike thrown into the ditch. Found by a church youth group on a camping trip in the park. The pastor held Jim's head in his lap as he died. How does a person describe their best friend? The gaping wound that marks their absence. The hole in your heart where they used to live and laugh and love. The ways that he has visited me in my dreams, maybe 12 times over the years since he died. A perfectly ordinary dream that's carrying on as usual, and then all of a sudden and out of the blue, there is Jim somehow in the story. "Hey," he'd say, "just stopping in for a bit to say hi and to let you know that I'm okay." So in these boxes was a big stack of letters from Jim in those years after he graduated. And my heart breaks open all over again, both with the deep grief of continuing to mourn the gaping Jim-shaped wound in my soul and with deep gratitude at the Jim-shaped blessing that he was in my life at all. In 6 or 8 cases, among the people represented by these hundreds of cards and letters and notes, in 6 or 8 cases, I actually try to find them via the wonders of the internet. And 5 or 6 of those times, I actually succeed. I took a deep breath and reached out, sending an email or a note via Facebook Messenger or a message on LinkedIn. In one case, Becky, who I knew back in college, I mailed a letter, handwritten again, if you believe it, to what I hoped was her parents' address in Illinois, and sure enough, they were kind enough to forward it to her. And we managed to pick up more or less where we left off. In these times of division, discord, separation, fear, disconnection, my going through these boxes and managing to reach out and reconnect with people from across the years has been one small but important way of living into a life of reconnection, relationship, listening, really seeing and hearing one another, of care, of holding a posture of presence, and practicing arts of attention. So, as we turn the corner toward wrapping up for this time, with an eye toward picking up the thread in part 4 of Living a Life That Matters, let me ask you this. What's in the boxes of your life? Or maybe it's a closet or a storage room, or a backpack, or even a purse or a wallet. What is calling to be unboxed? To come into the light and air of openness and possibility. Maybe in some cases, in order to then be let go. And in others, maybe inviting you to embrace with refreshed vigor and vitality. I hope in the let go pile can be the overwhelm of too many competing tasks and to-dos, obligations and commitments and priorities and pressures. loosen your grip. Let go. I hope in a freed-up space of openness and possibility can be a sense of meaning and of your heart's deepest yearnings and joys, memories and relationships, reminiscences and life-giving nostalgia, lessons learned, wisdom and insight, maybe sometimes hard-earned, maybe sometimes gifted to you by the people on whose shoulders we inevitably stand. In an acknowledge with gratitude but let go anyway pile might be mistakes, failures, regrets, trauma, heartbreak, grief, loss, suffering, first loves, old loves, maybe even accomplishments and successes, ribbons and trophies, to the extent that they are bound to the ghosts of past faded glory. Enjoy the memory, acknowledge with gratitude, but then let them go. And may your fully unboxed life include joys and celebrations, gratitudes and blessings, patterns of seeing and feeling and living that served you well at one time, but maybe no longer serve, and instead need to be reframed or even replaced. And may your unboxed life include stories of who you have been or thought yourself to be, but maybe are no longer, as well as tantalizing hints of the stories that have yet to live themselves out through you, through who you might yet become. And may your unboxed life always include invitations to remember that the past is past, the future isn't yet here, and all we ever really have is now. May your unboxed life include invitations to reflect on questions like, who am I really? Who am I becoming? What is my life really about? On behalf of, or for the sake of, what kind of story do I want to live my life? As Parker Palmer writes in his book On the Brink of Everything, those questions might be, what do I want to let go? Or they might be, what do I want to hang on to? But he suggests, even more important, the question can be, what do I want to give myself to? By the way, I'm really excited to say that my conversation with Parker is coming soon. Watch for it to drop here by the end of April. Stay tuned. And stay tuned for us to pick up this thread. We'll come back to exploring an unboxed life in a week or two. In the meantime, I'm Chris Johnson, sending you my deep, deep gratitude for listening to another episode of Pause, Purpose, Possibility, and for your being who you are in and for the world.